Call this meeting of Labor, Industry, Finance, and Policy meeting to order. The clerk will take the roll. Representative Jordan, I understand you found a mistake in the minutes.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I believe our testifier from House File 3957, our Deputy Chief General Counsel's last name is misspelled. I will look for the correct spelling of her last name, but in the interim, so, I believe Representative Greenman might know.
Mr. Chair.
We'll get it corrected. So
okay,
Representative
yep,
Jordan.
So I will move their minutes. I will move to approve the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan moves to approve the minutes with the one correction on the last name of the Deputy Chief Counsel for the Department of Labor and Industry. And I understand what they did is they put it, that's the phonetic spelling, not the regular spelling. Anyway, any other corrections on the minutes that anyone noticed? If not, all in favor of the minutes as corrected, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Want to read? And we have students here, I guess, today from Lionsgate Academy in Shoreview, Minnesota. We want to welcome you. And with that, we have one bill on our committee day, and House File 4444. Representative Greenman, if you want to get us started here and move your bill, and I believe it's going to State Government Finance.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'd like to move House File 4444 to be referred to State and Local Government Finance.
That works. And I understand you have an amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair, and I would like to move. It's the only amendment, I believe, is posted. A5 as an author's amendment.
And do you want to explain what the amendment does?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Most of this amendment includes some technical language and then a few pieces to get it in the way I'd like it. It includes a little bit more specificity on the first presentation that the partnership will make back to the legislature in order to, as they do their first 6 months of work, to be able to report back on some more specifics that they will start working on.
Any questions on the amendment? If not, House Representative Greenman moves the A5 amendment to put the bill in the order that she wants. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill's in the shape you want. Describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The House File 4444 is a bill that strengthens protections for Minnesota workers, law-abiding businesses, and taxpayers by improving Minnesota's ability to fight worker misclassification fraud. Minnesota has a long and proud tradition of protecting economic security, workplace freedom, and the social safety net for generations of Minnesotans who expect and rely on it. All of that is put at risk when workers are misclassified as independent contractors when they should be classified as employees. When you're an employee, you get minimum wage and overtime pay. You get access to unemployment benefits if you get laid off, workers' compensation if you get hurt on the job, paid time off if you're sick or need time to care, and if you face discrimination on the job, you have laws that protect you. Now, there are people who are self-employed, who are freelancers, who are in business for themselves, where they negotiate the terms, the payments, and scopes of those contracts and jobs, where they can make a profit or loss on each contract and build a book of business and customer base. Those folks are independent contractors and treated as such under the law. But if you're misclassified as an independent contractor, but still doing the work of an employee, you're cheated out of all those protections I listed and benefits. Plus, you pay your boss's share of payroll taxes. Misclassification hurts more than just workers. It harms law-abiding businesses that have to compete against companies that artificially reduce their costs and prices by cheating their workers and Minnesota taxpayers. And it cheats all of us. Taxpayers and communities and the communities that fund and rely on our social safety net also are hurt by employer misclassification fraud. And the truth is, misclassification is a huge problem, and it's growing. In Minnesota, it's reported that 1 in 7 employers have misclassified at least one worker, and that's OLA's conservative estimate in 2007. More recent national numbers say it's more like 1 in 3, and by any measure, it's rising. With a fissured workplace and the gig economy, the problem is growing and spreading. It's why there's been a lot of work done to tackle this problem. So last year, the Attorney General's office and Attorney General Keith Ellison convened a task force of workers, members of the business and freelancer community, experts, lawmakers, and our agencies. We spent the last 6 months in monthly and sometimes bimonthly hearings listening to workers and businesses, learning from Minnesota's enforcement agencies, and trying to understand the problem. And one thing is clear. Our policy approach to detecting, preventing, and punishing misclassification fraud is not working the way it needs to. I'm proud to be the chair of the co-chair of the Attorney General's Task Force. My co-chair, Rod Abrams, is here as well, and working with Commissioner Blissenbach, Deputy Commissioner Evan Rowe, Department of Revenue Commissioner Marquardt, and Director Dan Getchell, and members to come up with a set of recommendations of how we can strengthen current misclassification laws. In your packet should be the recommendations that came out of the task force, which passed 14 and one person who wasn't there in February. This bill that is in front of you comes out of that task force recommendations and out of DLIs, out of labor's long experience working with our misclassification statutes, and it's rooted in the data. One thing is clear from all of this. We need a whole of government approach to the problem. I see that there's some puzzlement, and I wonder if you don't have our recommendations, but I think we can get you copies. Just so that folks have them. We've spent a lot of time on them, so I want to make sure you see them. It's with the Attorney General's logo. One thing's clear. We need a whole-of-government approach to this whole-of-economy problem, and that's the approach this legislation takes. So Commissioner Blissenbach is going to walk through the bill, but I wanted to take 1 minute just to highlight the big pieces. So it provides new enforcement tools for our general misclassification law, strengthening the tools to combat misclassification all across industries. It provides specific tools to combat misclassification in construction by strengthening the independent contractor test and updating the registration system. And most importantly, it creates an intergovernmental misclassification enforcement and education task partnership to bring all of the enforcement agencies together with the one single goal of effectively and efficiently reducing misclassification fraud through strategic deterrence, enforcement, and education. Misclassification puts all of our social safety net, it puts worker protections, and it also puts market competition at risk. So it's a problem that we need to solve. And a bill that strengthens our agencies and gives them the tools to detect, investigate misclassification frauds, and gives workers some tools to do that as well, is long past time. And I look forward to hearing from testifiers and Commissioner Blissenbach to walk us through the bill.
And Commissioner Blissenbach, if you want to state your name for the record, and then you can proceed with walking through the bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4444, the bill addressing employer misclassification fraud. Misclassification fraud has a significant impact on employees, law-abiding employers, taxpayers, and social safety net programs. Currently, the law addresses misclassification in a piecemeal approach and does not set the government up to successfully address this problem or prevent the problem from growing further. This legislation specifically addresses deficiencies in the laws meant to address both general misclassification and misclassification in the construction industry. Many of the changes outlined are direct responses to challenges that DLI has faced and experienced in enforcing the current law. The legislation provides more clarity, which will promote compliance and allow investigations to be more impactful, streamline and expand enforcement authority, and strengthen the consequences for the employers who do, in fact, violate the law. This will help DLI and the state as a whole combat misclassification across all industries. So with that, I can provide an overview of what is included. So sections 1 through 5 address the powers and the duties of the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. It expands investigative authority of the department, adds construction misclassification to compliance order authority in Chapter 177, and clarifies and enhances penalty authority. Section 6 adds misclassification to the grounds for a private right of action. Section 7 expands and more thoroughly details both prohibited activities and remedies and penalties for general misclassification. It adds additional damages and penalty provisions to those existing elsewhere in state law. It allows for individual and successor liability for violations, and it expands reporting of violations to relevant local agencies. Section 8 are changes to the misclassification of construction in the construction industry. This section clarifies and broadens application of the independent contractor test to business entities as well as individuals. It modifies the existing test for construction to make the factors clearer and easier to understand and apply. It retains the presumption that an individual providing or performing construction services is an employee unless they are operating as a business entity that meets all of the factors in the independent contractor test. It refines and clarifies the independent contractor test for persons providing or performing building construction or improvement services, focusing on two core questions. Is the asserted independent contractor a separate and legitimate business entity? And is the contractual relationship a legitimate business-to-business transaction? It addresses who the employer is in instances where misclassified workforce is retained through a multi-tiered and layered chain of purported independent contractors. It expands and more thoroughly details both prohibited activities and remedies and penalties. It requires that a person treating an individual as an independent contractor retain records and that determination be based on and to provide those records to the department upon demand, and allows for individual and successor liability. Sections 9 through 10 create the Intergovernmental Misclassification Enforcement and Education Partnership and outlines the composition, roles, and duties of the partnership entities. The purpose of the partnership is to increase coordination and collaboration amongst the 5 different government entities, so Revenue, Commerce, Labor and Industry, DEED, and the Attorney General's Office, all of whom are responsible for investigating and enforcing violations that are related to misclassification. The partnership is charged with setting goals to maximize efforts to detect, investigate, and deter misclassification. Sections 11 and 12 provide authority for the Commissioner of Revenue to share data with Commerce and the Attorney General's Office for purposes of misclassification enforcement. Section 13 provides more enforcement tools for violations of the statutes and updates definitions to better align with other changes in the proposal. Sections 14 through 24 are updates to the enforcement in our construction codes and licensing chapter. They enhance and clarify investigative and penalty authority, including penalties for failure to remedy notice of violations, assessment of damages, penalties for obstruction of investigations, and expand grounds for summary suspension of permits, certificates, licenses, and registration. It allows orders to be issued against individuals, and it also changes stop orders, which allow the commissioner to order cessation of unlawful practices, to stop work orders, which allow the commissioner to order the stop of all business activities for engaging in certain violations or failure to comply with orders. makes stop work orders effective against successors and grants right of up to 10 days of average daily pay for work or for employees who are impacted by stop work orders. Section 25 updates the contractor registration system. It clarifies applicability of registration requirements by better defining covered work and geographic scope, and clarifies and modifies information and documentation needed for registration. It clarifies prohibited activities and explicitly prohibits requiring misclassified employees to register as contractors in the system. It replaces investigative and enforcement authority in section with authority set out in other statutes, and it expands permissible use and sharing of application data. I believe that gets us to the end of the bill and the walkthrough, so I just want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support, and I will remain if there are any questions after testifiers.
Thank you, Commissioner. The next person I have on my list, and we have a long list here, and I know there's member questions that we're going to have at the end, so if you can keep your testimony to two to three minutes, it'd be great. I have Bernie Burhan, and the next person up is Paul Slattery, so be prepared. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Bernie Burnham, and I'm the president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, the state's federation of more than 1,000 local unions who represent over 300,000 working people in every corner of our state in nearly every kind of job. Our labor movement envisions a state where all working people, both union and non-union, have safe workplaces, a job that can sustain a family, time to spend with our families, and a dignified retirement. Today, I'm here to speak in favor of House File 4444. Working people have an expectation that state and federal laws are designed to protect them will apply no matter where they work. They expect that long-standing labor rights and protections like minimum wage, workers' compensation, overtime pay, access to unemployment benefits, the right to collectively bargain, and more will apply to them. Sadly, far too many employers across industries such as construction, transportation, retail, warehouse work, entertainment, sports, nonprofit work, building services, and more break the rules to cut their costs by classifying workers as independent contractors while demanding the same expectations as if they were employees. This improper misclassification deprives workers of both the long-standing protections I mentioned earlier and the hard-fought protections we passed in 2023, such as paid family and medical leave and earned sick and safe time. Representatives, working Minnesotans have had it with low-road employers who deprive them of their rights just to save a buck. It's time for Minnesota to strengthen and streamline enforcement of our worker misclassification laws to discourage this unfair and illegal practice. House File 4444 will begin to accomplish this goal. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Paul Slattery, and the next person is Mark Bradley. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Slattery. I'm the Director of Politics and Organizing for the Teamsters Union, Local 120. And I'm here today to speak in favor of House File 4444. We represent 12,000 members in numerous industries that see worker misclassification and the fissuring of the workplace as a strategy to reduce labor costs and resist unionization. We see this happening especially in the delivery, trucking, and distribution industries. The Teamsters strongly support many of the recommendations made in this task force report, including providing for the same enforcement penalty authority in the general misclassification section as exists in the construction misclassification section. We believe that creating a misclassification enforcement partnership composed of the Attorney General's office and the various state agencies that sees the results of worker misclassification is a great idea. This partnership should draw from the combined enforcement authorities of those agencies, create mechanisms to freely share data, and collaborate on investigations and enforcement actions against unscrupulous employers. We further believe that that this task force should consider policies that discourage the fissuring of the workplace in ways that aren't technically misclassification but have similar impacts. Amazon delivery drivers, for instance, are not technically misclassified, but they're not actually employees of Amazon. They work for one of the small companies who get Amazon subcontracts that can easily be replaced if, for instance, there is a union organizing campaign. I applaud the work of the task force and urge you to continue to work on solutions to help workers facing all of these types of problems. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mark Bradley, and the next person I have on the list is Charlie Cushing. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Mark Bradley, and I serve on the Twin Cities Local Board of SAG-AFTRA, the Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. I'm here today in my capacity as chair of the Local Government Affairs and Public Policy Committee. In my remarks today, I will frequently refer to talent, which is the common generic industry term for actors, announcers, singers, extras, and other performers. The industry means the recorded media industry in which performances by talent are recorded by audio or video technology. It does not include live performances. Imagine you're a non-union talent and you're engaged to perform in an independent film. You're hired as an independent contractor. You arrive at a studio or other location when you are called. You perform a script that you have been given and you are directed in your performance. You are paid sometime later, usually by the non-union agent who got the job for you. The agent may charge you well above the 10% that is mandated in a SAG-AFTRA agent's franchise, and they may also charge the client a placement fee. It should be obvious in this example that you should have been classified as an employee. There is precedent going back at least to 1957 that states that talent are employees. Every common law test says talent should be employees, including the current ABC test. The ABC test requires a worker to pass three clear tests to determine whether they are an independent contractor. Test A requires the worker to be free from control and direction. And as in the example earlier, talent will almost always fail this test, meaning they are employees. But even a voice talent working unsupervised in a home studio would fail test B, which requires that the work performed is different from the hiring company's customary business. Talent are almost always hired by production companies whose business is indeed to make audio and video programs. A non-union talent may pass test C, which asks if the worker has a track record of being an independent contractor, but a talent will have already failed test A or B. It is also clear that the wishes of the parties involved are irrelevant for proper classification. In the DeQuisto case of 2000, a voice talent argued that he wanted to be an independent contractor so he could deduct his business expenses from the first dollar on Schedule C, but the court said it was the nature of the relationship that made him an employee. The 2007 study by the Office of the Legislative Auditor, which was mentioned earlier, said that in Minnesota, misclassification is worse in our industry than in construction. It's clear that employers in the Minnesota recorded media industry are taking advantage of the current leniency around misclassification. SAG-AFTRA would like to see that talent in the recorded media industry are clearly and definitively classified as employees with one important carve-out. Our singer-songwriters should enjoy union wages and protections, but there needs to be a clear stipulation that they retain intellectual property rights to their work. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you for your testimony. Charlie Cushing, and the next up is Jesse Madison. Again, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Hi. My name is Charlie Cushing. I'm the business representative of the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, Local 745. Since 2009, we've represented over 250 talented broadcast technicians in the states of Minnesota and Iowa. My introduction to misclassification started in 2016 when a group of workers employed by the Minnesota Timberwolves, who were responsible for the in-house production on the Jumbotron, approached my local about organizing a union in their workplace. Their primary reason for seeking union representation in 2016 was the last time they had received an increase in wages was 1997, 19 years prior. After receiving overwhelming support, we filed for a National Labor Relations Board election. This then set off a 15-month series of events attempting to determine whether or not these workers were employees or independent contractors. Ultimately, we prevailed. The NLRB in Washington, D.C. issued a ruling in August of 2017 determining that they were misclassified and were indeed employees. After a 15-plus month wait, we were unsuccessful in an NLRB-conducted election. Even after a federal regulatory agency found the Timberwolves to be in violation of U.S. labor law, it was not until 2022, 6 years later, that the team finally complied and started paying these workers as employees. My second example is U.S. Bank Stadium. When it opened in 2016, the in-house workers of the Minnesota Vikings were paid for one season as W-2 employees. Less than 10 days after the Timberwolves ruling, they switched everyone over from being employees to independent contractors. It was done as a blatant attempt to avoid being organized at any point. They continue to misclassify their workers at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis and their facility in Eagan to this day. This next week, we're going to see the State Boys Hockey Tournament at the Uxell Energy Center. Hubbard Broadcasting has broadcast these games since 2004. There will be a full TV crew that will be misclassified last week, this week, and the next 2 weeks. They will not get 40-hour-a-week overtime protections. They will not have workman's compensation, and so on. Misclassification has far-reaching consequences for workers. When misclassified, you pay a higher tax obligation, no workers' compensation, you're not eligible for unemployment, and no paid sick leave. My request of the state lawmakers is please create a law that will allow Minnesotans to anonymously report these employers that are breaking the law anonymously so they don't have any fear of retaliation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Jesse Madison, and then I have a Michaela Terwee on deck.
Hello, Chairman.
Welcome to the committee. State your name.
Hello, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jesse Madison. I am founder and CEO of Purple Tally Productions based here in Bloomington, Minnesota. I would like to thank you all for including me on this important work you're doing here today. I'm here to speak out in support of House number 4444. Since 2014, my company has worked to provide staffing, payroll, and production expertise in the live sports, entertainment, live streaming, and corporate production industry, much like my previous testifier just described. My involvement in this issue began long before I started a company. I myself was a 1099 freelance broadcast technician dating back to 1996. Back then, everything was pretty much 1099, whether you liked it or not. Thankfully, our broadcast technicians got together and voted in favor of union representation in 2009. That began the change in our industry from 1099 to W-2. When it comes to how this issue currently affects my company, last year alone, we faced a staggering loss of $105,000. It's a pretty big deal for a small company. That's not just a number, but it's a testament to the consequences of inadequate enforcement around these labor laws. This loss was compounded by the actions of a former client, Joshua Giles Ministries, and their refusal to settle their invoices, which further exacerbated by the engagement of misclassified workers through the company American Horse Labor of Lakeville, Minnesota. These actions not only undermine the integrity of our industry, but they also embolden others to flout the law with impunity. Additionally, if someone gets hurt on their shows, it's not their problem, it's yours. Our company pays tens of thousands of dollars a year for workers' compensation because it's the right thing to do. We're a responsible company. We get punished for it when irresponsible employers are allowed to just skip that part and enrich themselves with zero consequences. They don't get punished, so they just keep doing it. We fought over the same issue on shows like the Summer X Games at U.S. Bank Stadium a few years back, right up to the recent World Cup cross-country skiing event in Minneapolis. That just happened a couple weeks ago. In both cases, it was the same company, Echo Entertainment of Los Angeles, California. They bring in 1099 labor, a lot of it out of state, and they cover a major portion of the shows with that labor. It's not just them. There's dozens of others of out-of-state local production as well, companies that are continuing to use misclassified, uninsured workers for broadcasts taking place at the University of Minnesota, Xcel Energy Center, and Target Field all year round. In summary, I'm not here just to complain and hope someone else fixes it. I have a documented history of working with lawmakers and labor leaders to help solve these issues, and I'm looking to continue to put action behind these words. Thank you again for including me in the work to help solve this issue.
Thank you for your testimony. Michaela, And then I have Anna Vergarba. I know I butchered that. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Hi. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Michaela Terwee, and I'm an organizer with the Minnesota AFL-CIO. However, before I joined the Minnesota AFL-CIO team, I was an organizer for a 501c3 organizing project that spanned across multiple states, and I was a 1099 contractor for nearly 3 years. I'm here today to speak in favor of House File 4444. When I first took this organizing position, I was still in college, and I was really excited to have a decent paying job. However, what I did not know was this job was as a contractor. I signed this contract not knowing that this was any different from all the W-2 employee positions I had held before. It wasn't until after my first month that I was told to submit an invoice for my hours and that I saw there were no taxes taken from my paycheck, and I realized I had been hired as a contractor. As a 21-year-old, I didn't even know someone could hire me as a contractor like that, especially because this job had operated like any other job I had held previously. So when I started working full-time, I started to ask questions as to why I didn't have access to benefits and employee status. As I talked more with my coworkers, we realized that we were misclassified workers. Our boss had told us multiple times that he highly preferred we did not take on other contracts as it might interfere with the full-time work we were expected to do with him. We were not given the ability to set the terms of our contracts that we signed every 3 to 6 months. We were not allowed to bill for any overtime hours on our invoices. We were trained and directed to do the work as he wanted it done. Our boss decided what holidays and time off we received, sometimes paid time off and sometimes not, depending on his mood. And we were issued work equipment in some situations, but not all. Many of these factors do not pass the IRS test for being 1099 contractors. Many of my coworkers and I became upset about this, and we did come together to form a, we came together in solidarity to ask for a pathway to become employees. However, because we were contractors, we were not able to officially unionize, but we did form a solidarity union, and we did strike twice when our contracts were expired and our coworkers were not being paid. However, because we all worked in different states and worked mostly remote as a team without a central location for our employer group, we weren't sure what government body to report our issue to. And I was the only one of my coworkers working in Minnesota at the time, so I didn't know if there was any action that I could take in this state. This is why I'm really excited to see this legislation, like House File 4444, so future workers will have a recourse when they are misclassified. I appreciate your time today to share this experience. I'm excited to see you all tackling this issue in Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. Anna Vergarga, and then the next I have Jose Alfredo Gomez Rosales. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and members of the committee. My name is Anna Vergara. I am a marketing representative for LIUNA Minnesota, North Dakota. We are Minnesota's infrastructure union. I am here today to support House File 4444 because misclassification is widespread and pervasive in the construction industry. A 2021 Midwest EPI report found over 30,100 Minnesota construction workers are either misclassified or paid off the books, accounting for 23% of workers in the industry. A recently published North Star Policy Action Report documents the use of contractors tied to proven or alleged exploitation of workers on affordable housing projects that have received over $84 million in taxpayer subsidies. By far, the most common form of exploitation uncovered was worker misclassification. Misclassification is prevalent in every subsector of the construction industry. We've found multiple cases of misclassified workers installing broadband, widespread misclassification of stone veneer installers by a multi-billion dollar stone manufacturing and installation corporation, and we find it exists on both privately and publicly funded projects. Misclassifying workers is prevalent and widespread in construction because there are too many incentives to cheat and enforcement of the law is too lax. Too many owners will look the other way when presented with an unreasonably low bid price on a project. Usually the only people that get caught and pay the price for cheating are subcontractors further down the chain. We find that when they do get caught, they pay their fines and go right back to work on publicly subsidized projects. House File 4444 will increase cooperation between state agencies responsible for upholding the law and halting the legal exploitation of workers in Minnesota's construction industry. Chair Nelson and members of the committee, thank you again for your time and I encourage you to support House File 4444. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Jose Alfredo Gomez Rosala. And the next person I have is Peter Coyle. And again, state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Buenas tardes para todos. Mi nombre es José Alfredo Gómez Rosales.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is José Alfredo Gómez Rosales, and I'm Brianna Kemp. I'll be interpreting.
Thank you.
Actualmente estoy casado, y mi esposa y yo tenemos dos hermosas hijas. Actualmente vivo en Eagan, Minnesota, y trabajo en la construcción. Soy miembro de CETUL, un centro de trabajadoras en Minneapolis.
I am married, and my wife and I have two beautiful daughters. We currently live in Eagan, and I work in construction. And I'm a member of CETUL, a worker center in Minneapolis.
En el verano del 2022, me pidieron que trabajara en un proyecto de techado. Cuando empecé a trabajar, me ofrecieron $200 al día en efectivo. Pero cuando recibí mi primer pago, fue de unos $160 a $180. Le pregunté a mi patrón por qué era menos y me dijo que si quería ganar los $200 tenía que esforzarme más. Trabajábamos de 5 a 6 días a la semana por un promedio de 12 horas diarias y nunca nos pagó tiempo extra.
In the summer of 2022, I was asked to work on a project for roofing. When I began working, they offered me $200 per day in cash. When I received my first payment, it was around $160 or $180. I asked my supervisor why it was less, and he said if I wanted to earn the full $200, I needed to work harder. We worked 5 or 6 days a week, an average of 12 hours per day, and never received overtime pay.
El 9 de julio tuve un accidente. Me caí del techo de una casa de dos plantas. Después de la caída, me llevaron en ambulancia a un lugar donde podía bajar el helicóptero y llevarme al hospital. Tenía heridas graves por la caída, una fractura en la cabeza, dos codos rotos y la cadera fracturada. Cuando mi supervisor se enteró de mi lesión, vino al hospital y me dijo que no me preocupara por las facturas porque el seguro iba a cubrir todo.
On July 9th, I had an accident, falling from the roof of a two-story house. After the fall, I was taken by ambulance to a place where the helicopter could come down and take me to the hospital. I had severe injuries from the fall, including a head trauma, two broken elbows, and a fractured hip. When my supervisor first found out about my injury, he came to the hospital and told me not to worry about the bills because the insurance was going to cover everything.
Tras 5 días en el hospital y varias operaciones, me enviaron a recuperarme a casa, donde empezaron los retos económicos y emocionales. Necesitaba tanto cuidados como un recién nacido. Debido a mi lesión, nuestra situación económica empeoró hasta la desesperación. No recibía ninguna prestación, así que no teníamos dinero ni para pagar nuestras necesidades más básicas.
After 5 days in the hospital and several surgeries, they sent me to recover at home, where the economic and emotional challenges began. I needed as much care as a newborn baby. Due to my injury, our economic situation suffered, putting us into desperation. I wasn't receiving any benefits, so we didn't have money to pay for our basic needs.
Una semana después, mi patrón me dijo que había habido un error con el seguro y que después de todo, el seguro no iba a cubrir. Me dijo que me olvidara del seguro y me ofreció $200 semanales para cubrir las necesidades básicas. También me aconsejó que cambiara mi nombre y mi dirección, que con eso las facturas del hospital desaparecerían si nadie las pagaba.
A few weeks later, my boss told me there had been a mistake, and I wasn't covered by insurance after all. He told me to forget about the insurance and instead offered me $200 per week to cover basic necessities. He also advised me to change my name and my address and said that eventually the hospital bills would disappear if no one paid them.
15 días después de salir del hospital, llegaron las dos primeras facturas de $33,000 cada una. Desesperado, decidí buscar un abogado. La abogada descubrió que mi patrón utilizaba la póliza de otro contratista, razón por la cual yo no estaba cubierto por la aseguranza.
15 days after leaving the hospital, the first two bills arrived. each for $33,000. Feeling desperate, I decided to find an attorney. The attorney discovered that my boss had been using the insurance policy number of another contractor, which is why I wasn't covered.
Es una práctica muy común en la industria, especialmente cuando los trabajadores están clasificados erróneamente como contratistas independientes o se les paga en efectivo bajo la mesa, porque es una manera para reducir los gastos laborales.
This is a common practice in the industry, especially when workers are being misclassified as independent contractors or paid cash off the books, because it's a way to cut labor costs.
Lo económico y la aseguranza se resolvió, pero sigo luchando porque a causa del accidente tengo 9 tornillos en los codos, artritis grave, sobrepeso, pérdida de memoria y visión borrosa. Con mis brazos no puedo levantar más de 2 a 5 libras.
Even though we were able to resolve the insurance issue, I still struggle with the severe arthritis, memory problems, and blurry vision. I still have problems with my arms and can't lift more than 2 to 5 pounds.
Ahora comparto mi experiencia para que más trabajadores conozcan sus derechos y para concientizar sobre los problemas que enfrentamos, como la misclasificación que a menudo se oculta a la opinión pública. La misclasificación se presenta de muchas formas, a veces por un contratista diciendo a un trabajador que forme su propia LLC, a veces pagando en efectivo bajo de la mesa, a veces los trabajadores ni siquiera saben que han sido misclasificados, como en mi caso. Hasta que sufre un accidente, descubren que no tienen compensación laboral.
Now I share my experience with other workers in the industry so that more workers know their rights and to raise awareness of the problems we face, like misclassification, which are often hidden from public view. Misclassification shows up in many forms, sometimes by contractors telling workers to form their own LLC, sometimes by paying cash under the table. Sometimes workers don't even know they've been misclassified, like in my case, until an accident happens and they find out they don't have workers' compensation insurance.
Por último, quiero decir que los desarrolladores desempeñan un papel fundamental en la solución de este problema. Ellos ponen presión en la cadena de subcontratistas a cortar gastos y hacer el proyecto más barato. A menudo, cortando gastos resulta en contratista y subcontratista misclasificando a los trabajadores, cortando protecciones como compensación laboral y sueldos de los trabajadores. Es necesario que los desarrolladores sean responsables por las prácticas de negocios que roban del trabajador para maximizar sus ganancias. Por eso les pedimos que se unan al programa Construyendo Dignidad y Respeto para garantizar a los trabajadores unas condiciones laborales seguras y dignas.
Finally, I want to emphasize that developers play a critical role in solving this problem. They put pressure down the contracting chain to find ways to cut costs on a project. Many times, cutting costs results in contractors and subcontractors misclassifying workers, cutting protections like workers' compensation and wages for workers. We need to hold developers accountable for the ways their business practices are robbing workers in order to maximize their profits. That's why Say Tool members are calling on developers to join the Building Dignity and Respect program to ensure workers have safe and dignified working conditions.
Este proyecto de ley será un paso importante para proteger a los trabajadores, aumentar la aplicación de las leyes en contra de la clasificación errónea y penalizar a aquellos en la industria de construcción que siguen utilizando este modelo de explotación. Les exhorto que apoyen este importante proyecto de ley. Muchas gracias.
This bill will be an important step in protecting workers, increasing enforcement of misclassification, and penalizing those in the construction industry who continue to use this exploitative model. I urge you to support this important bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Gracias. Peter Coyle, and then the next on my list is Tom Dicklich. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Very nice to see you, members of the committee. My name is Peter Coyle. I'm an attorney lobbyist with Larkin Hoffman. I'm here today on behalf of Housing First Minnesota. I want to start by acknowledging the brief conversation I was able to have with Representative Greenman this morning. Unfortunately, because of the timing of the bill being introduced and being heard today, there's been almost no time, really, to engage with the author, let alone with members of our association about the complexities of this bill. But I'll offer my comments on their behalf regardless. I also want to acknowledge the tale of the gentleman that just testified. I'm sorry to hear about it, frankly. It's a reminder, though, that it's already against the law to misclassify workers, to take advantage of them. It's criminal, frankly. And we didn't hear what happened with his so-called employer, but I hope he was prosecuted, and I hope he's out of business in Minnesota, at least. At least that's the point of view that my client takes on matters of this sort. Having said that, it's my own professional opinion as somebody who advises contractors throughout Minnesota that while the bill itself is well-intended, and I don't doubt the sincerity of the author's intentions with it, I think it will not move the needle at all in terms of garnering more enforcement or compliance. The truth is, bad actors are bad actors. That's who they are. It's already against the law to misclassify workers and to abuse them in the way that was described in the previous testimony. So I want to be really clear about that. We do not condone that kind of behavior, and we support enforcement of the law to the extent that it's needed to ensure that those folks can't do business in Minnesota. I do want to offer a couple of other points. This is the second major labor bill that has come before this committee in the last 2 years, and this is the second time that major business organizations that are directly involved in this industry were not consulted. In fact, the first we heard about this topic in the form of this bill was when it was introduced Thursday. We represent an association that comprises thousands of contractors, subcontractors, trade organizations, suppliers throughout Minnesota. And I would say respectfully to the author and to the committee that it's just unfair and inappropriate that a bill of this magnitude with such complexity would not be given an opportunity for comment in its formative stages so that we could have tried to shape it to achieve, frankly, a better and a fairer outcome. And perhaps that process will allow it for input over the course of the session, though I'm not encouraged, frankly, by the fact that we haven't been part of the conversation up to this point. The other thing I would say is that the bill is going to have the most negative consequence on the people that this legislature is trying to help the most. Home buyers, home builders, people that are trying to make their way in this state and in this industry by forming their own small construction companies. This is a 35-page bill. It's very complicated. And I say that as somebody who advises these companies on regulatory compliance. The smallest companies are going to have the hardest time absorbing the complexity of these bills. They're going to lack the resources that their larger competitive companies will have to employ lawyers and accountants and others who can help them comply with the law in its literal terms. Frankly, my prediction is the predominant share of the violators, when they are identified, are going to be people who make an honest mistake, because that's what happens already today before this law even takes into effect. And I presume, based on the sponsorship of the bill, that the bill is going to move forward, even though I would prefer that it not move forward. And then the other loser, of course, are going to be the home buyers. The legislature is hard at work trying to adopt policies to reform the housing marketplace in Minnesota, and I applaud the bipartisan support behind that effort. This bill, respectfully, unfortunately, takes us in the opposite direction by raising additional regulatory barriers and regulatory costs that are going to make it more expensive to build a house in Minnesota. I appreciate the chance to speak with you this afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I appreciate also the ability to visit earlier today with Representative Greenman. I'd be happy to respond to questions if you have any for me at the appropriate time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Coyle. Tom Dicklich, and then I have Laura Ziegler. Welcome to the committee. State your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Tom Dicklich. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. We represent over 70,000 union construction workers around Minnesota. I'm here to publicly applaud the work of the Attorney General's Task Force on Worker Misclassification and to voice the building trade support for House File 4444. Employer misclassification and fraud is rampant in our industry, and the building trade is on a mission to clean it up. Every construction worker in Minnesota deserves to be paid fairly, to be covered by workers' comp if they get hurt, to get unemployment if they get laid off, to get overtime pay when they work more than 40 hours per week, and to get the other benefits the law affords employees. As this committee knows, studies have shown that over 20% of the Minnesota construction workers are denied these basic rights by employers looking to keep their costs and their bids artificially low. Many of those employers work for the general contractors and developers who are represented by associations who are here testifying against this bill today. We do not make these claims lightly or flippantly. As this committee knows, we in the trades are often skeptical of additional governmental regulatory burdens that could slow development or chase investment out of our state. and we consider the employees of our members partners in the industry who we are committed to help make successful. But in this case, we cannot stand by while rampant illegal activity continues to take place in our industry. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Laura Ziegler, and then next I have John Beshe. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Laura Ziegler. I represent Associated General Contractors of Minnesota, and we represent over 350 commercial construction general contractors, subcontractors, and suppliers. We are the state's oldest and largest commercial construction association, having been in existence for 105 years. So for the purposes of this discussion and of significance to this bill, our members are commercial contractors. They do not perform single family residential construction. Additionally, over 80% of our contractors are union affiliated and are signed to a collective bargaining agreement. And AGC contractors maintain the principal relationships with organized labor in the commercial construction sector. Our association negotiates collective bargaining agreements with over 15 different trades in both the commercial building and highway market sectors. Our members are committed to our creed of skill, responsibility, and integrity. It is our belief, and I believe the intent of many people addressing worker misclassification, is to hold the bad actors accountable. We also believe this should be while protecting all of the employers and independent contractors that play by the rules and follow the laws. While we are still digesting the bill's full effects, our concern with House File 4444 is that legislation needs to consider a more focused approach on the bad actors and where we can improve upon coordination and enforcement as a state. Employers must be able to adequately manage their operations in the same way that individual workers should be able to choose how they participate in the workforce. We also believe that important components of this discussion will occur with the OLA's report on worker classification, misclassification, rather, that will be released soon. We also strongly encourage and ask that construction employers' concerns are heard and reflected in any future versions of this legislation. So with that, I will go over some very initial concerns with the bill. As I've said, we do feel that it's far encompassing and instead should take a more precise approach, holding those bad actors accountable, particularly those with repeat violations. This bill, as we read it, is broadly punitive. It provides penalties without regard to knowledge or intention, and it holds potentially unsuspecting persons liable for punitive damages, and this includes folks like four men and four women on the job site. Our other primary concern as it relates to the construction industry independent contractor test changes in the bill. There are several additions to this test in addition to the existing nine-factor test. And for example, the new multi-part independent contractor test for building and construction improvement services require that a written contract be signed before service for a stipulated sum. This makes change orders extremely difficult and complicated. It also prohibits a cost-plus contract agreement. And lots of contracts are cost plus. These help ensure quality, it promotes long-standing relationships, and it also helps independent contractors, construction contractors, mitigate their risk when they're putting together the bid. We are exploring other areas of concern, such as DLI to stop work, and in certain situations where they can inspect job sites without notice, where there are some unique considerations. I will conclude my comments by saying the proposed intergovernmental misclassification enforcement and education partnership, as outlined in the bill, conceptually, we're okay with that. Our concerns lie with those penalties, the punitive penalties, as well as the changes to the factor test. So I want to thank the author, Representative Greenman, for her time yesterday to discuss some of these issues. And thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll be around for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. John Beshe, and the next I have Tom Revenue. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Beshe. I'm here on behalf of the Associated Builders and Contractors of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on House File 4444. ABC is a trade association made up of 340 commercial and industrial contractors and their 20,000 employees. These men and women are part of the 75% of workers in the Minnesota construction industry that choose to be merit shop craft professionals. ABC promotes free enterprise and fair and open competition in the construction industry, in which anyone can succeed based on merit. We oppose violence, coercion, intimidation, and the denial of the rights of both employees and management. We believe that work opportunities should be made available to all people, regardless of labor affiliation. ABC is opposed to House File 4444, which, among other things, makes changes to the test to determine whether an individual is an employee or an independent contractor in the construction industry. We followed the work of the task force on worker misclassification throughout the interim and paid particular attention to the recommendations that were approved in February. Throughout the duration of the task force, there wasn't a whole lot of discussion as to precisely how the current test regarding independent contractors is inadequate, and there was also no discussion regarding the substance of the changes that is in the bill before the committee today regarding the test. The recommendation that was approved was merely to streamline the test with no detail as to what that would actually entail. In contrast, a lot of attention during the task force was given to strengthening enforcement efforts by various state agencies and finding ways to improve interagency coordination. Given that focus, we feel it would have been more appropriate to look at ways to better understand the current nine-factor test, not to replace it with a new test entirely. As written, this bill will result in more confusion by doing away with the nine-factor test and replacing it with an even more complicated 14-factor test. Failure to satisfy just one of those factors will result in costly fines and liabilities. The bill is punitive and it ignores good faith mistakes that a contractor may make. Another troubling aspect of this bill is the creation of the private close to the public group made up of the four commissioners and the attorney general to meet and share private information and investigate hardworking Minnesotans. Now, we understand the need for interagency collaboration, but as written, it doesn't appear that there are any guardrails to ensure transparency. For instance, to what extent will meetings be open to the public? Will decisions be made that impact Minnesota contractors or other businesses without proper recourse to access that information? How will data regarding individuals discussed during the meetings be protected? Instead of prematurely passing laws that are overly punitive, we believe that the focus should be on enforcing the laws that are already on the books and educating the public as to their rights and responsibilities under the law. Finally, one thing I would like to point out is that, as written, I believe that the bill's current effective date is August 1st. You know, if passed, this would leave an extremely short window of time for contractors to familiarize themselves with the new rules. Is the Department of Labor going to be providing educational materials on these changes that will be made available to the public? If so, is there going to be a deadline for when such materials must be provided? Because quite frankly, we're in the same situation as many of the other testifiers, still trying to digest what this bill is truly going to mean. And it's going to take time to navigate those changes, and we just think the August 1st effective date is not sufficient. In closing, we feel that this bill, as currently written, is designed to make it nearly impossible for honest construction companies to continue to hire independent contractors, and we respectfully request a no vote on the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Tom Revenue, and then the last person I have on my list is Richard Kolodziewski.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for listening to my testimony. My name's Tom Revenue. I've been practicing labor and employment law for 30 years, and I represent both union signatory contractors as well as non-union contractors. And I will reiterate what Mr. Coyle said, and that is, if we take a look at the history of Minnesota Statute 181-723, it was created under the Dayton administration through a bipartisan task force. That task force took 2 years to come up with the statute as it is today. And at this point, the task force, to the extent that it was a one-sided task force. It didn't really listen to business interests. I'd like to point out that there are some significant issues in the bill as it's written right now. As drafted right now, the bill will essentially make a subcontractor and all of its employees, the general contractor's employees, regardless of the subcontractor's business form, the number of employees that they employ, the fact that the subcontractor has workers' compensation insurance, unemployment insurance, and offers employees other benefits. So let me give you an example. It's common for both union and non-union contractors to enter into contracts with general contractors on a time and materials basis or on a cost-plus basis. So under lines 10.26 and 10.30, even if you have a one-time contract will essentially make the subcontractor's employees the general contractor's employees for purposes of that project, even if the subcontractor paid employees $50 an hour, offered them employee benefits such as health insurance, had them covered under workers' compensation and unemployment benefits. So that's a problem. Two, with regard to the way the bill is written right now, I believe that it implicates very broad federal and state constitutional rights against unreasonable searches and seizures by the federal or by the state government. For instance, the bill would grant the commissioner broad access to information unrelated to the commissioner's authority that she's granted. It gives her the authority to demand any data and any information whatsoever, and it gives her access to all areas of the business, even though it's completely unrelated to the investigation that's ongoing. In addition, this bill allows for access or disclosure of tax returns to other agencies for any purpose without due process, which is problematic. And then lastly, another problem that I see with this bill is this formation of a government partnership with various agencies working to address worker misclassification. That's a noble purpose, right? The concern that I have is, what about public disclosure? Deep within this bill is specific language that says it excludes this government partnership from disclosures under the Minnesota Data Practices Act. And one must question why. And for those reasons, I really hope that this committee reconsiders the bill as it is currently drafted. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Kolodziejowski, and you'll tell me how to pronounce it properly. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Nelson and representatives. I'm Richard Kajewski, the Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. I represent over 12,000 carpenters, industrial workers, millwrights, pile drivers, and interior systems carpenters in Minnesota. House File 4444 offers employees who might previously have been misclassified an opportunity to receive the essential benefits and protections all workers should be afforded, including overtime, minimum wages, better safety standards, and other additional benefits. I began my employment with the carpenters over 4.5 years ago. For years, I arrived before 7:30 a.m. to an office building just down the street from here that opens to the public at 8 a.m., Monday through Friday. Sadly, nearly every day of my career prior to my arrival, workers who have been exploited through wage theft, tax fraud, and even worker misclassification fraud are waiting outside of our building to speak with business representatives. It's become a revolving door. I have documented, listened to, and videotaped more of these stories than I should have to. Each one is sadder than the next. Children are left without life's essentials. Hardships are manufactured at the hands of greedy employers, and a wake of victims are left in the path that include each of us in this room. For far too long, employers have found ways to require someone to work as an independent contractor. This bill levels the playing field for honest contractors who are not cheating the system and are properly treating their workers as employees. With this legislation, dishonest employers will no longer get away with undercutting honest contractors who are not cheating workers out of the benefits that they're entitled. Mr. Chair, members, I urge you to support this bill. Unfortunately, current laws do not provide much of a deterrent against misclassification fraud. However, this bill addresses enforcement, protects our small businesses, and will deter dishonest business owners from trying to cheat the system. Minnesota needs this legislation. The burden of misclassifying workers falls on the backs of hardworking taxpayers. All too often, these workers don't pay any payroll tax at all and don't have any workers' compensation insurance. They don't receive benefits, and if they're paid at all, it is so little it makes it virtually impossible to pay for these things and buy groceries for their families. Members, let's put an end to this. Let's do what's right to protect workers. Let's do what's right for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. All member questions. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Greenman, for your bill. I'm actually going to start with a thank you. My thank you is to you because there was a part of me when I read this bill that thought that we were going to end up with having a new state agency, but instead, the way that your bill is drafted, it's written to have more collaboration. So that is appreciated. Amidst this, I do have a few just clarifying questions to begin with. And so and maybe you can point me to it within the bill, but my first question is this bill specific only to the building and construction trades generally? I heard a lot of testimony about that, but then I also heard testimony that took us a different direction.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, you're welcome for not creating a new state agency. That was not the intent. So. This involves both. So in Minnesota, our 181.722 is our general misclassification statute, and 181.723 is the construction misclassification statute, and then there's also a construction independent contractor registration test, system. And the reason is because over the last couple of decades, and there's probably people in this room who've been working on it. There's been some specific work done, including probably our chair, to deal with misclassification of the construction trade. And so there's some specific rules that interact with licensing and other things. But we do also have a general misclassification provision. And while the changes are different, in the general misclassification, where we don't touch the test, there's actually four tests, depending on whether you're talking to deed or revenue or DLI. This does impact both of them because, as you heard, misclassification is a whole of economy issue.
Representative Schultz.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenman, using your description there, can you point us to maybe what page of the bill we should best operate from to understand where you're going with these definitions? I'm really trying to figure out the latitude, like how widely are we going here? There was specific reference by one of the testifiers to truck driving, and so that I'm just seeking to find our latitude.
Yeah, so and I will, I think I can answer this question by myself, but I'm going to bring up Commissioner Blissenbach because you're starting to get into questions that I may need to phone a friend on. My understanding is that, when we talk about truck driving, and particularly I think what the Teamsters are talking about, that would be in the general misclassification statute. There is a construction statute, and then there is an everything else. And that's sort of the scope.
Commission.
Have I answered that one?
You want to expound on the answer?
Sure. Chair Nelson and Representative. So the general misclassification statute starts on page 4, line 4.17. It's 181.722, and that it relates to everything outside of the construction industry. I think even a testifier earlier referenced that the construction industry test, which starts on page 7, which is statute 181.723, which starts on page 7 in section 8, is specific to construction. That provision was established during the Dayton administration, I think 2007, to specifically take an eye towards misclassification in the construction industry. So two separate provisions.
Representative Schultz, and I'm going to go to Representative Mecklen after that. And we can come back. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll take this to review the statute more. My concern is I don't want to open Pandora's box, and I don't think the testifiers here came here to testify to Pandora's box of all worker misclassification. And I think that that is a key concern, because we are basing this bill off of a task force of the Attorney General's office, of which there was no Republican participation, of which there was a huge amount of concern because so many voices weren't represented, which brought us to this bill from these recommendations here. So that's my concern, and I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As it's been stated, Representative Greenman, this task force, it sounds like many of the stakeholders were not consulted on any of this prior to this coming out publicly. Were any of these different trade organizations invited to these conversations?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mecklen. So we had 6 hours of testimony from workers, from businesses, from we heard from a few lobbyists, and that was, that call went out broadly. That was in 3 hours in November and 3 hours in December. Jonathan Weinhagen, who is on our task force, put out the word. I contacted him to put out the word. I know that the Attorney General's office put out the word to all the lobbyists that they work with. There were many lobbyists who are on the Capitol that I have spent lots of time talking about to this. And so I don't, I couldn't tell you that either one of them ever reached out directly to me, but the call was out there. And I will say that I have had lots of conversations over the last 6 months. We started meeting in September, and this bill was based on a presentation, an hour-long presentation that was given in early January, that's available online. That was, I don't know how many slides it was, but 15 or so slides that became this bill. And so there has been more process around this bill than most bills I've worked on. And also there's a lot more process to go. We have, I think, at least 3 stops on working on this. The other thing I will say is, since I've been in the legislature, this has been something that folks have been talking about. I see former Labor Chair Eklund in the room, and that's when I started working on this 3 years ago. So this issue of misclassification is not a new issue, and it's something that the task force is really built to bring some of that together. And we're still working. We're going to be working through August. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've referenced the past OLA report, which I believe is 2007, yet we have one coming out in a week or two. Why are we not waiting to see the results of that? Because there's a lot of numbers being thrown out about how many, you know, this many percentage or workers out of 10, what have you. But nothing was given to us that actually supports, definitively proves that. So I'm very curious as to why we are not allowing that. I also see there's no fiscal notice. There's going to be one of those as well, since we're with the author at the moment.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you bringing up that OLA report. We are hoping that it will come out I think I was told originally February, and now I think mid-March. So, and I think it may be the middle or end of next week. We don't have any control, as you all know, over that process. I will say I'm on the OLA evaluation subcommittee, and part of the reason that we are doing that is because the 2007 OLA report, if you haven't read it, is really, really helpful. I think that this will be an update. We will hear it before this finishes going through committee. I anticipate, both from my conversations with folks who have been working with the OLA and the questions they've been asking, is a lot of the same things that were identified in 2007 are continuing or worse. And I think we have been talking to a lot and getting a lot of the same testimony. If there is new stuff in that report, we will get that before first deadline and can potentially come back to you.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The commissioner also testified earlier that it adds investigative authority. We had several people here. I mean, it's been brought up about Amazon and delivery companies, and Amazon obviously has come up in this meeting numerous times in this year and last. And when we had all these conversations, even meatpacking plants last year, that you simply didn't have the staff of an ability to get to all these places to investigate all these different situations or complaints. Yet you're going to take on a whole lot more now, and yet this is so sweeping and so broad. Are you going to have to hire a significant amount of staff further to accommodate all these new potential issues?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I actually think this will allow us to use the resources we have more efficiently. It's not taking on additional work. It's taking the work, learning from what have been the challenges in the past, and addressing those challenges to make the investigations much more streamlined. We encountered, and I'll be the first to admit it, government is not set up to address misclassification. We are having challenges because of the way the laws are set up. It's hard to prove, it's hard to investigate, and the law's unclear on many of it. Also, the consequences aren't significant. And we need to have consequences and incentive. In fact, we need to have more incentive to follow the law than to not follow it. And right now, there is more incentive to not follow the law because the savings that you can have by not following the law, and if you get caught, it's a slap on the wrist, you move on. So there need to be more incentives to follow the law than to not.
Representative Mecklen, one more question, then I'm going to go. We'll get back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had the testimony last week or the week before about the Earn Sick and Safe Time, how there was a significant delay in getting everybody up to speed to understand how to implement and be compliant. This thing says that it's effective immediately, and we are still working on educating the employers out there with Earn Sick and Safe Time, let alone all of this new language and new rule. So since we're going to move on, because I'm making that point, I mean, we put out grants for the entrepreneur funds, and then this goes against being an entrepreneur because it tells you you got to be an employee. But, you know, in the last couple years, I think this administration should really consider it like a major ceasefire against our small businesses, because this is not never ending and does not seem to stop. I have a cease and desist order that was sent to me by one of your employees today that I reported somebody to your department who, luckily, they did a good job. They took him off the market. He can't go out and provide these illegal services anymore and take advantage of people. In fact, not only did your department do its job, so did the courts. They actually got him for a felony theft by swindle, and the homeowner was allowed to secure a judgment for the down payment he gave. But I made sure of that happening. I also know of another situation where a cleaner that uses 1099 employees that come to her house, get into her company vehicles, use all of her equipment, and she 1099s them. They have been reported to your firm or the Department of Labor at least by three different people, and nothing's ever happened. I think all of these things that I mentioned here, some of them are terrible, but there's already laws there to prevent them or hold them accountable. And yet it never, there's always seems to be, we need another law to make it worse, to make it less appealing to break the law. But if you're not enforcing the laws that you have, how can you prove that they do not work? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mecklen. Representative Hussein.
Ms. Greenman, I know you have been working on this bill for a while, and I thank you for the offer and timing that you put it in this bill. At the same time, I feel bad for Jose, who was here testified and going through this horrible, those companies that have taken advantage for those vulnerable people that, you know, do not speak the language. And this bill will strengthen and hold accountable for those people that have taken advantage and strengthen our statute. So I wanted to thank you for Emmy Greenman for bringing this bill forward, and thank you for all the testifiers for testifying about this bill. Thank you very much.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it your intention to expand this meeting to the next Tuesday if we run out of time for questions?
Representative McDonald, as I told you before the meeting started, we're going to pass this out of here. It has to go to multiple committees. We can run a little bit late, but we've got at least 10 minutes left before our shutoff time. We can go a little bit past that, so continue asking questions. wanted to make sure everybody had a chance to ask questions, which is why I tried to get three questions and then move on to the next person. We can circle back to other people.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I better ask my question quickly. So, you know, there are two testifiers. There were some very good testifiers today and made some compelling arguments, pros and cons. I think that Mr. Coyle said it best as far as that this is a very serious issue, and the state of Minnesota and the Department of Labor takes it very seriously. And as you said, Commissioner Blissenbach, it's hard to investigate, it's hard to determine. So we certainly need to do a better job, don't we? And there are some bad actors. We know that. We heard it from one of the testifiers. But there are also some very key good employers that are following the law. And the fear that myself and many you've seen on the paper from the NFIB, Minnesota Housing First, the Chamber of Commerce, and several others that have some really heartache with the bill and haven't had the opportunity really to digest it and to unbox it. And some of those folks are experts in their fields. I certainly am not, so it's tough for me to unbox it as well. I have probably seven pieces of paper with questions and things trying to find out, what this bill does. But my questions, two questions, Mr. Chair, to Representative Greenman. First and foremost, you mentioned that you were still working on this until August. I'm not sure what you meant by that, but I hope it means you're going to work on a better bill that you can get the contractors and the Minnesota Housing First and the Chamber of Commerce and NFIB, those organizations that are in the trenches doing the work, will have an opportunity to help craft a better bill. Not to mention the OLA, whose report was supposed to be out in February, early February, but they must be jammed up on there, especially with all the bills that have been going through, 444 so far. Why not wait for the OLA's report before you draft such a large piece of legislation?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McDonald. And just to note, this there is lots of work to do on misclassification that is not in this bill that we heard about in the hearing, and I will not take the time to go over that, but we heard 6 hours of testimony. So when I say we're going to continue working, we're going to talk about co-enforcement next week. We have a lot more on our agenda. So just if folks want to participate, please reach out to me. It's all public, and we take public testimony. On the OLA report, we have been, again, as I've said, the last OLA report was 2007. Work did not stop on this. Both work within the agencies and not here today, but we will go through, we will be in taxes at some point, revenue, deed, Commerce Fraud Division. Commerce Fraud came and testified. So all of that work has been happening. I think we don't have control over the OLA's report, but we do have control now over listening to and responding to this problem that is only growing. So again, when the OLA report comes out, if there are things that that we want to add, I am looking forward to that conversation. Again, I think we'll be in sync of next week. We're going to go to judiciary. We'll have to go to taxes. So like all of our other bills, the work continues as we move on, and I look forward to continue to talk to you about it.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, very good, Representative Greenman. That's it's good to hear that this is a work in progress. All bills are, of course. Now, personally, if I was the author of the bill on a very important topic, especially when we're collaborating with many agencies and the great work that Commissioner Blissenbach does, personally, I would have waited for the OLA's report because they are kind of experts in a nonpartisan, nonpartisan manner to really put together stakeholders that can come up with legislation that most will probably have peace in the valley. But I'm happy to hear that you are at least eager to hear that report and working on those as we go along. And I know we're running out of time, so particularly on your bill on Section 21, where cease and desist on all work orders. I think that...
Give me a page site.
It'd be page 2 of your bill, section... Oh, no, that's another one. See, I have so many pages here.
Section 21 starts on page 22.
Yes. There it is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In reading your language, it appears that if there is a bad actor, or I'll just call them bad actors, or even a mishap, a misunderstanding, a misclassification, and the commissioner determines this, seems like all projects are a stop order, cease and desist. cease and desist. And that could be many projects throughout the state, not just one. Is that, do you think that that's really a necessary or a good to put into law, that all projects would stop because of a one misclassification of perhaps a subcontractor of a subcontractor?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to turn this over to Commissioner Bissenbach because I listen to the experts on this. I know in OSHA and other places of the law, we have the ability to do that when there are violations, and so I will turn it over to Commissioner Bissenbach.
Commissioner Blissman.
Chair Nelson and Representative. So the stop work order allows us to stop the work of a person, so the entity that is violating the law, it would stop their work. And it is when there has been a violation found or if they have failed to comply with a final notice, a final administrative order, or a final licensing order. So yes, that is what it does. I will say the U.S. Department of Labor has a provision in their law called the hot goods provision that allows them to go in, and when they have an employer that's violating the law, they can hold their goods from moving down the line, and it is an extremely impactful remedy available to the department, and it typically addresses the violation very quickly because it is giving that incentive to follow the law where it may not exist otherwise.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One more question, then I'll move on to Representative Schultz.
And okay. So then, Commissioner, just under sections 22.29, it says that the commissioner will may issue a stop work order requiring the requiring cessation of all business operations of a person at one or more of the person's workplaces and places of business all across the person's workplaces and places of business. Some good lawyers wrote this up. A stop work order may be issued to any person who has violated the applicable law, who has engaged in any of the activities under subsection 11, et cetera, et cetera. So if a tile worker is a subcontractor and working on several different projects, maybe he's is it one house for 1 week and another house for a couple of days and another house for, you know, a week later? Under this bill, all of that work would have to cease. At least that's the interpretation that myself and many other experts interpret that.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the work of that individual who is violating the law, their work, yes, it would, if the stop work order was drafted broadly to attach to multiple jobs that that entity is doing, yes, it would apply to that. There is the ability to target one specific job site if that were the what is needed in the situation. But yes, this gives the commissioner authority to broadly impact that entity for the violations that are set forth in the law.
Representative Donald.
Mr. Commissioner, thank you, Chairman. So, yes, so that's true. So then all jobs could be stopped then. So stopping many multiple jobs, even though that tile worker, if you're not to pick on tile workers, is finished with that project, but because he worked on that as a subcontractor and was deficient in the law, if this should pass, and I hope that we fix it before it passes, then, again, all projects are stopped and all economic activity in communities are stopped because of this one. Could be a miscalculation, misqualification, could be a mistake, not to mention the fines of $5,000 per day per person. That seems a very heavy-handed and very unfair for many of the projects going forward. And I hope, Representative Greenman, that you will at least look at that and just look to see that it's just completely not fair that you would stop all projects. Could be six or seven projects, building projects, apartment buildings, et cetera, et cetera, would have to be stopped under this language, and the commissioner verified that. With, and I'll end with this, because the chairman's in charge here, with the fact that the employer or the subcontractor or the person has no legal right to mediate what the commissioner says. Our current law right now, an employer gets to have a mediator if there's a fine by the Department of DALI, Department of Labor and Industry. But under this bill, they have no way to remediate. It's just, you're in violation, here's your fine. No appealing, no mediating, like we have done in previous laws, but your bill doesn't allow that. So I hope that you look at that, and if that's something that you can address.
Commissioner.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, it does have a process to challenge a stop work order that exists in the law. So they have the ability to request an expedited hearing. The hearing has to be commenced within 10 days after the commissioner receives the request for the hearing. So there is a process outlined in the law. There is and also a process to appeal a decision if the decision is not in their favor.
So I'm wrong on that. Could you point that to the section, and then I'll be done with that.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's part of current law, so it's on page 24 in subdivision G.
As you're looking at that, Representative Myers, and then I'll go to Representative Schultz. Give him a chance. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. One question and then a few things I want to add. So I'm just wondering, you know, why the personal liability was your objective for people in supervisory capacity. Just wondering how that came about.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Myers. And I think that that piece, and I've talked to a few folks about that piece, the goal, and I think that the problem we're trying to address in construction particularly, is that you sometimes don't know who your employer is. You go on a job site, and I've heard this over and over again. I'm repeating it, but I heard it a couple of days ago. I don't know if we heard it today, is that if you go to any construction site, lots of people don't even know who their employer is. And so what we are trying to do is make sure, and I know the commissioner can address this much more eloquently than me, but I will try to be brief on it, is make sure that we are actually attaching that liability and figuring out that employment relationship where it lies, and also making sure that workers know and are able to sort of pinpoint that.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in our experience at the Department of Labor and Industry, we have seen situations where we find a violation, we issue penalties, penalties are not paid, and not long after, we see the same individual, different legal entity, coming back with the same violations, same process we go through. We have very few resources or abilities under the law to take action against a different legal entity for what happened to the prior legal entity, and it is also just a time-consuming resource. Has a lot of impacts on our resources when we're investigating the same individual over and over again with different legal entities.
Representative Myers.
Thank you. And a follow-up to that, I mean, you know, you look at an accountant sitting in an office that may have some sort of supervisory capacity that isn't on a job site. So what other industries do you see this in where you hold people personally liable?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so it does require the way that the bill is written that the individual who would be held liable needs to be the one committing the violation. So it's not just going to someone who may just be employed by the employer and pursuing violations against that individual. It requires that individual be the one found to have violated the law.
Representative Myers.
Thank you. Yeah, so I think definitely there needs to be some tightening of the language, maybe looking at people at doing the hiring. I think you've put some very broad terms in there. Like wage theft, deliberate misclassification is wrong, but I always feel like we have such a heavy hand in here when we do things versus trying to bring some reasonable solutions. And once again, you know, I look at this bill as flipping the switch. We need something that's reasonable, executable, and we have laws on the books right now that we could use. There's other options. There's giving notices to, having employers, owners, operators give notice to independent contractors and employees. There's less aggressive ways to do some of this stuff. And again, it's always just wanting to flip a switch, and I have a tough time with that, given that we've done some things and you never get to see how they actually work in reality or in operations. We just move on to the next thing and the next thing. It's, you know, we're taking choices away for people. We are taking away freedom of contract. We're giving more government control. I'd just like to see some balance for once.
Representative Schultz and Representative McDonald, I'll give you a chance to wrap up at the end. Representative Schultz.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Greenman. Towards the beginning of the bill, line 3.25, I believe, is the first mention to aggrieved parties. Can you outline for us exactly what that definition might entail under just the kind of the purview of this isn't just my understanding, the penalty isn't or the liability isn't coming down just for the one instance, but it's has a far broader definition based upon what I understand of aggrieved parties.
Representative Greenman.
Mr. Chair, I am going to turn that over to the
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so that is really just an intention to make sure that regardless of whether the employer classified them as an employee or an independent contractor, if in fact they were an employee, that we're making sure that they are provided with the, you know, whether the compensation or the tax benefit, that they're provided with that and that that liability attaches for those violations.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to this point, I think that it is it's a little bit too broad right now, and I think that it has the potential in the future to add additional concerns to the penalties, the liability for business owners. And I think it kind of underscores a more global point of what we've seen in this committee. Heavy hands towards especially small businesses, subcontractors, and others. And what the result is going to be is the consolidation under these major corporations, which is ultimately what this committee has tried to go after. So, you know, if you want to play to big business, like God bless America, go for it. But this isn't going to serve small businesses in our state well, and I think it's going to result in businesses and employers leaving our state.
Representative McDonald,
wrap up. All right. Well, I'll make it quick. Yeah. So, Representative Greenman.
Yep. Sorry.
You know, with all the criticism that we throw at you and the fact that you got many organizations that are concerned with the bill, they also agreed in reading their letters from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the NFIB, the Truckers Association, ABC, Housing First, MSSA, MGA, Hospitality in Minnesota. They all agreed, it appears, that there is a problem and that we must address it and at least be concerned about a misclassification and bad actors taking advantage of employees, right? So I think you certainly are commended on bringing the bill forward and getting to that nature. I think we personally just we need to be a little more diligent in including all the stakeholders that should be involved. At least that's what I've done the last 14 years that I've been here, especially in issues that are as complex as this that you seek, and I'm sure you did seek out experts to come together to collaborate such a large piece of legislation. But in doing so, we do also risk the fact, and I've done this with my own bills, an adverse effect that we've done, that unintended consequences. And I think in Minnesota, it's evident now, the recent study that met Minnesota's a net deficit in businesses building and starting in Minnesota. They are moving to states like Florida, Texas, Colorado, North Dakota, South Dakota. And I think the last report I read, it was we lost out on $582 million of investment because of Minnesota companies going somewhere else. So I think we as lawmakers have to be careful of too much regulation, too much laws, too heavy fines, too heavy penalties, and be more diligent in keeping the businesses here and thanking them for the good work that they do. You are on the right track with your bill. You certainly don't need me saying this. You don't need my vote. You got it going. But I hope that you at least, and I think you will, you're an astute and wise lawmaker, you'll listen to the concerns and complaints here and make this bill better so it doesn't affect our subcontractors and independent contractors as well. We certainly don't want to lose the ability for those who are subcontractors, independent contractors, to continue to do what they love to do, and that's that. So I hope you'll consider that, and if you have closing thoughts, of course, because you're the author, I'd like to hear those as well. And with that, I'd like to call a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call's been asked for. We'll have a roll call. Representative Greenman, your wrap up, and then
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this robust discussion. I really appreciate this committee and folks digging in. What I will say, and when we talk about all of this stuff in this committee, our job is to ensure that Minnesota workers have the protections that we in law provide. And all of those protections from unemployment insurance to workers' comp when folks get sick. And that's not just about the workers. We have decided as a state that we are better off if someone gets hurt on the job, that they get compensated in their injuries and it doesn't go to uncompensated care in the hospital. We are better off if folks get laid off, if they have a paycheck to take care of their families and also continue to be in our economy. And so this is absolutely about the workers and the workers we've heard stories of. Also the small businesses, we heard one today. We heard a lot more in the task force of folks who are saying, we're paying our employees, we're making them W-2, we're competing against folks who are outbidding us because they're not paying into the revenue, the UI trust, the unemployment insurance comp, their taxes. And so when we talk about leveling the playing field, we need to make sure we're protecting workers. We also need to make sure that we are creating incentives for folks to both follow the law and continue to invest in our public good. So with that, Mr. Chair, I really appreciate the conversation. Know the conversation will continue. Invite you all to continue working with me on this, and I would ask for your support.
And Representative Greenman renews her motion that House File 4444, as amended, be referred to the State Government Finance and Policy Committee. Roll call has been requested. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Chair Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Berg.
Aye.
Vice Chair Berg votes aye. Representative McDonald. Representative McDonald votes nay. Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Representative Greenman votes aye. Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Hill votes aye. Representative Hussein.
Aye.
Representative Hussein votes aye. Representative Jordan.
Jordan, aye.
Representative Jordan votes aye. Representative Kozlowski.
Kozlowski, aye.
Representative Kozlowski votes aye. Representative Meckland.
Nay.
Representative Meckland votes nay. Representative Myers.
Nay.
Representative Myers votes nay. Representative Schultz.
Nay.
Representative Schultz votes nay. Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes aye.
Representative Wolgamott votes aye. There are eight ayes and four nays and one excused.
With eight ayes and four nays, the bill is referred to State Government Finance. And with that, members, we are adjourned.